We even in SharePoint Office 365 engineering, we do actually visit customers. So that's the reason why I skip earlier today. Anyway, the recording has started. So welcome everybody. The Patterns and Practices monthly community call. This is the August 2015 version. And there will be a lot of people joining a few minutes late here and there, as expected. That always happens. And we'll see how many people are actually attending. So the agenda is relatively typical. So what we're going to do within all of these calls, if you've been here before or if this is your first time, we're going to run through some of the monthly highlights, essentially covering through the contributions and other topics. We will have a short look on what are we planning to do within the following month and what is the key, let's say, concentration areas over there. And then we concentrate half of the call to the demos. So today we will have a demo from Irvin around the delta handling in the Patterns and Practices engine. And Irvin is all set up. And then we should have Luis in the call as well. I'm just double checking and updating him as a presenter to the call as needed. Like mentioned, personally, I need to jump slightly earlier, jump away from the call slightly earlier, and that means that I will be leaving roughly on the time when Irvin starts his or completes his demo. I need to catch a flight to go back home. But that's fine. We have plenty of time. There's interesting stuff what we have released as part of the August release. So let's actually start going through the material. For those who are joining the call and you're not really super familiar what the Patterns and Practices Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices is all about, the AKMS Office Dev BMP is the one URL to remember, where we then link all of the other relevant information. It also contains information about the model, how we work, how to contribute back if you have time, and also a good reminder from Nigel. Good, thanks. Even though the name is Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices, we do also target on-premises add-in or app model topics. Which might actually be a one topic to start also. You've probably seen the terminology change. We are moving in more and more to use the add-in term, but the adding model means exactly the same as app model. Technology-wise, it's exactly the same thing, so don't get confused on the terminology. And most likely, it will take, at least for me, 2 years to learn to use add-in rather than app model. But it means the same thing. It's just a terminology change. And we won't be absolutely forgetting the on-premises. So that's definitely on our radar more and more. There's a few links, additional links on the slide. So AKMS Office Dev BMP Yammer, AKMS Office BMP MSDN. That's the MSDN location for the official guidance, videos, and training. All of this is available for you as much as you want. The training material, as an example, you're more than willing to start delivering trainings for your customers. For any other people based on that material. It's all there for you to reuse. So we really want to make sure that people have access on all of this guidance and all of the stuff what we do internally in Microsoft and also together with the community as part of the efforts towards the app model and adding model implementations. Good, let's actually move into the actual topic of today, which is more about the latest changes within the August. And this is kind of our classic slide. We're running out of space related on the numbers, which is kind of an interesting part. This is the classic monthly statistics related on the growth of the program. And one of the key numbers what we're always looking into is the forks in the GitHub. In the GitHub side, if you really want to use the GitHub in the right way, not just download the zip file, rather use it as a tool to get the latest as easy as possible, you're forking the GitHub repository. And there's a guidance in our wiki how to do that as well with the step-by-step screenshots. And the forking is giving us the indication on how many users are actively using and following on the BNB guidance. And it's already at 836 I updated that number earlier today, so it might be actually slightly above that one as well. We'll hit the 1,000 relatively fast, which is super excited. There's some other numbers like the merge pull requests, and this is indicating also the amount of changes, what the community is submitting towards the guidance, and we are hitting the 800 marker with the pull requests, so which is a significant number as well. The closed issues, and we do know that we need to work on those issue list topics, is in 169. We have a roughly 3,800 unique visitors during the last 2 weeks. That has gone down slightly from the previous months, the previous month of June. But that's understandable because it's a vacation season, especially in EMEA side, which is absolutely impacting directly the numbers. NuGet package, the core component, has been downloaded already more than almost 8,000 times. And one of the key numbers what we're also tracking is the Yammer group participants. So AKA MS Office Dev BNP Yammer, where we have an extremely active Yammer group. It is the most active by far developer Yammer group in the Office 365 technical network. And you're more than willing to ask questions from there rather than sending an email for somebody like me and trying to get an answer. Using the Yammer for the questions and feedback and comments is good so that the other people can actually follow what I was suggesting and you can participate on a discussion. We do have a Facebook page which has 235 likes. We're not actually super, super active on that one. And now we're pushing marketing links there as well. So that's quite all right. It was more originally a social experiment, but now it's an official Facebook page as well. Something related on this number, so we're running out of space within that page. These slides are actually quite nice. So the BNP activity chart, so this is showing actually the Yammer group growth from last November, and we're able to see the unique visitors, we're able to see the growth within the NuGet downloads and all of the other stuff. And then I was looking at this metric or the chart, and this isn't actually looking that impressive. It's an old wisdom that it's a lie. A lie, a big lie, a statistics. So it's a matter of how do we actually show these numbers to show the impact of the program. So if we actually have a look on the percentile increase in activity during the past 10 months, for example, the GitHub forks has increased to 600%. And it's not really a lie, but it's a way of presenting the growth. The unique visitors have significantly grown. The Yammer group members are grown significantly as well. But we're super, super happy as part of the Microsoft engineering, as part of the community members, and as part of the BNP group and the core team that the growth is ongoing. Which is absolutely critical for the success of the program. And moving on things, I'm going to do a blog post related on the BNP usage survey. So this was a survey around the BNP usage, which we kept on June. I've been personally, I had a vacation period, and then I've been running out of time to customer engagements, but I will be posting additional details on this one relatively soon in my blog post or in my blog. But I just raised three main topics from the BNP usage survey. So has the BNP guidance actually helped? That's pretty much 80% of the people are saying yes. Some of the people said, I don't know. And it was less than 10% who said that the BNP guidance is not useful. Which is something obviously which we need to tackle. It should be much more than that. Percentage of having a custom site provisioning per solution, more than 80% or 75% are actually having a custom site provisioning per solution within their deployments, which is absolutely one of the main used and main cases where the BNP guidance has been used. Now that we have that also mentioned, but Erwin is going to also demonstrate from a delta change perspective as part of the demos. And then one of the key questions in the survey, the June survey, was also the next area to concentrate. We've been heavily concentrating more on the enterprise development guidance. You've probably seen that within our samples. Many of the samples are asking quite high permissions. And that means that if you build using the BNB guidance as such, those applications won't be really working, or they won't be as such available. You cannot publish them as such in the SharePoint store, because in a SharePoint store, you cannot ask, for example, tenant permissions or site collection provisioning permissions. So it's been more a enterprise development guidance for people who've been moving from the farm solutions, filter search solutions, to the Office 365, and they need to convert their existing or transform their existing customizations. And now the key question was then the next area to concentrate, and we're getting quite, well, obviously the Office 365 APIs is an interesting part. They built enterprise guidance around that one, more, let's say, nicer solution or samples and patterns around that one. And then the follow-up was extending obviously to SharePoint add-ins. We understand that we need to keep on doing that. ALM guidance and on-premises add-in or app model guidance was then pretty much in an equal stage. Office client add-ins didn't get that much attention, but that's something which we need to keep on in our radar as well. And like mentioned, I'm going to do an additional blog post with all of the details related on questions, so you're up to date on where are we heading and what was the real results from the BNP usage survey. Thank you everybody for who participated on this one. Absolutely valuable information. And then I'm back, sorry for that. Absolutely valuable input for the program, so we know where we are actually spending our time and our resources. The other thing about what we collected, I was just quickly pinpointing, I think I did a five quotes from the comments of the BNP usage survey. There was other comments there as well, which will be published in the blog post or some of them. Obviously, people are pretty happy about the stuff and the BNP guidance, what is out there. It seems to be helping people to do the transition. The last comment is one of the main, well, the whole team was extremely happy about this one. Office BNP is by far the most collaborative and open forum I've ever seen in my 15 years of working in Microsoft or with Microsoft. That was a really nice way of putting it. At the same time, there's a really good amount of suggestions, which are extremely valuable, like the number four bullet there, which is the customer scenario focus instead of developer progress focus. And that's absolutely valid guidance, and that's absolutely valid valid input where we need to focus in the future as well. Because when you think of it, the transformation, the adding model or app model, is not really about the technology. And customers don't want to concentrate on the code at such. It would be a nice that if we actually add additional documentation and guidance around scenario-based solutions, and then we reference that technology, what is enabling that. So that's absolutely in the radar of the team as well. So good input, and sharing those slightly later, more detailed in the blog post. The BNP GitHub repository split plan. So this is something what we've already started and doing. The BNP repo or repository in the GitHub is like 850 megabytes, and that's a humongous repository. And it's really nasty way or nasty to manage. It's really nasty to start consuming, because when you pull down the samples, you need to pull all of the samples, and you don't want to fill up your hard disks with all of the stuff. So we started splitting our repository. As an example, obviously the BNP repository will remain in the GitHub, but then we are splitting away, for example, the core component to its own repository. We already have been splitting away the core component and PowerShell. So Irvin's own baby, the BNP PowerShell commandlets, is in the own repo. The Office add-ins will be in on repo, Office 365 API samples in on repo, and BNP partner pack is something new, what we will start working actually next week, most likely, which will be in on repo as well. I don't have a slide on the BNP partner pack, but that's really around showing real-world scenarios built on top of the BNP guidance. So what we're looking into doing with the BNP partner pack is really to come up with a step-by-step guidance how to set up a reference implementations for the site provisioning, site collection provisioning, branding management, governance, time and jobs, and scripts and documentation on how to set up those actually in production. The whole point is then that anybody who can pull down that repository are able to set up a demo and or set up a starting point for their own customizations. So people will, or everybody will understand how these things can be configured to be running with Office 365 in the Microsoft Azure. We're scheduling the BNP Partner Pack to be fully released, I think in mid-October. And it's targeted to be, however, created in an open way in a open repository, so you're able to follow up on things. Good question from Nigel. Does there a need to be an on-premises API repository? The answer is actually, in our thinking, answer is no, because in all of the samples we're trying to pinpoint are they working in the on-premises or not. And I do know, Nigel, that there has been some challenges around some of these things. Some of the samples, and we need to make sure that the documentation is up to date. The on-premises is absolutely in our radar, also from guidance perspective. I'll start working on updated written white papers or guidance latest next week around the on-premises side. SharePoint 2016 coming pretty soon, and also SharePoint 2013 absolutely needs additional enterprise-ready guidance on the on-premises. Now, the second part of the slide is what does it actually mean? So right now what we did was that we released the August master merge. So the master branches in the BNP is still containing all of the code in the what was in the BNP. The dev branch is now starting to be slightly cleaned. So if you are want to contribute back on the core component, if you want to contribute back on PowerShell, go back on those new repositories, pull down the dev branch, and start pushing pull requests on those new repositories. So we get those changes and pull requests submitted on the right location. In the master branch, this change will be visible starting from early September. So we are now in the verge of moving into that zone. Good. Moving on things. So the August release, some of the new samples, some of the key new samples is the core.jQuery, which is a component. It's inside of the component solution. It is showing how to set jQuery extensions to enable extending SharePoint functionality to provide hosted apps using familiar jQuery syntax. And this is something that Patrick Rogers came up with and submitted as a contribution. The second one is a, how would I put it? It was actually an accident that it came to be an own version. It should have been overridden by the existing sample, so we'll clean up that one in the September release. But it's the core.connected Angular apps, and it's showing how to do AngularJS and a signal R way of two different app parts communicating between each other from prior initially. The next one is a business apps, remote calendar access, super, super interesting from Jonathan Haas, Microsoft as well, which is showing a way to share SharePoint site calendars using a iCalendar format. It's a super cool sample, which is really showing also the power of Microsoft Azure together with an Office 365. The core embed JavaScript header and footer, I think this came from Andre Lake, if I remember the name correct. I don't have the name written in here, but it's a nice way of showing how we can actually modify or bring end-user UX, end-user capabilities or UX functionalities using the JavaScript embedding technique. So providing headers and footers without actually modifying modifying a master page, so it wouldn't face the custom master page challenge, which is absolutely debatable. And so let's not actually spend time on that. It's a good example, however, showing that what you can do without the requirement of creating or introducing a custom master page. We have the Azure AD Redis cache user profile, which is showing how to cache user profile information in Azure site. So that's going to help on the performance side, and that's from Luis Valencia. And Luis is going to show that one today if we can resolve some of the technical challenges. I'm going to, by the way, now that I remember, I'm going to promote Luis as a presenter. And then Azure AD Web API SP Online, and now I lost the name for that one, is showing how to secure, well, it's about the Web API secured with an Azure AD communications. A really interesting sample on that side as well. There's also a lot of updated samples, which is one of the things what we're seeing more and more. So obviously, we don't want to have a significant amount of or multiple samples which are pretty much showing the same stuff. We would rather want to have a updated versions or contributions on the existing samples or extending them so that we don't just have a samples for the sake of having additional samples. We'd rather have samples which is providing additional value, and they are growing based on the community contributions as well. Good. Then what we did in the PMP core component side, so the core component side is core component is starting to be relatively stable, which is actually excellent. So we're not having that significant amount of changes in a core component. It is still getting a code quality improvements all the time. There's some additional capabilities added on the core component. We obviously updated the core component NuGet packages as part of the release. We did find a small possible issue related on the core component earlier today with Irvin. So we most likely will push out the new NuGet packets in a matter of 2 days, which will help on the provisioning engine side. Irvin can actually probably pinpoint some of that in his demo, so that will be fine. Then on the BNP provisioning engine side, which is the remote provisioning engine as part of the BNP guidance, and it's part of the BNP core component, that's still evolving based on the input from the field, input related on, for example, on-premises support. And now what's really cool and what's now included in the August release is the Delta handling support. So what you're able to do is to apply changes on the existing site or extract changes from the existing sites and apply those changes to other sites as well. So now you can more easily do an ALM way of handling all of your SharePoint sites using the remote provisioning patterns. And that's a really, really, really super cool capability. And that's why Irvin is going to spend, quite a lot of time on that one during the demo. But that will be highly beneficial for everybody interested on that one. And there's some additional improvements related on that one. We do know that we are still hitting some obstacles on the on-premises sites. And one of the key challenges within the PNP provisioning engine is that which CU level we support in on-premises. Because supporting multiple cumulative update levels in the on-premises is extremely painful. Because that's an exception handling within the code. And that's something what we're trying to figure out how to do this in the future in a much more flexible way and a much more sustainable way for on-premises as well. Good. Moving on things, I'm going to run out of time again because I need to make sure that Luis and Irvin has some time. There's a lot of guidance updates. So this is stuff what Todd Baczynski has been doing and together with the core team. Todd is the person who's writing this and we're providing input for Todd. There's quite a lot of additional articles which will be linked to the dev.office.com as well. And the whole point of this initiative about SharePoint adding recipes is that if you did have a full-text code solution related, for example, elevated privileges, related on feature stapling, related on list definitions, these articles will explain you the options and what you can do, how to implement that same capability using then the adding model techniques. So this should be highly beneficial for people doing the transformation from the full text code and farm solutions to the adding model. they do also have a lot of insights if you, even though you wouldn't be doing a transformation. So there's a lot of insights on, okay, list instance, how do I do that? What is the implication? What is the supported ways of doing localizations? In the engineering side, we do absolutely acknowledge the fact that some of these stories are not, let's say, they don't necessarily have a happy ending. So some of these guidance articles are like not as, let's say, friendly as they might have been. The challenge is that not we don't have a easy story for all of these things, but we're trying to pinpoint the current situation as openly as possible within the articles, so that you know, is it possible or not? And if it's possible, what is the approach or what is the workaround, and so on. The next things, we released a significant amount of new videos in our video section in Channel 9. So there's the new set of PMP add-in model transformation training modules. So there's 8 modules which are recorded. 2 modules will be released likely later. There's the PMP transformation process introduction as well. And then there's a significant amount of additional demo videos which are showing individual samples in PMP. These are actually part of the PMP transformation training videos as well, but we wanted to share them as individual demos so that you can easily find a video which is, for example, showing how to do remote timer jobs or timer job functionality in the adding model way. You don't have to go and try to find that demo inside of the training video. So a lot of new videos. Some of you do like watching videos. Some of you hate watching videos. We do understand that one as well. It's up to the learning practices. Do you actually find this helpful or not? Good. Moving on things. Obviously, the BNP, the whole purpose of the Office 365 Dev BNP is to engage with the community. And having a communication channel and having a community a chance to contribute back. And this month, there was a lot of people contributing back, or actually this past 2 months, there was a lot of people contributing and providing us a extremely valuable input as code, as guidance, as a suggestions in Yammer group and the discussions on that side. There's Andre, there's Ben, Irvin is part of the core team, it's in Danny, there's no point for me mentioning all of you by the name. And by the way, Nigel, I explicitly need to apologize, I missed an L from your name, but it's on your Twitter tag, so sorry for that. But there's a lot of people who are involved and contributing back on the Office 365 BNP, because this is actually a community-driven program. People like Irvin or Paolo or Bert or Frank, they're doing this actually mainly outside of their normal business hours for the sake of sharing, so that people, the other people in the community can actually benefit from the learnings of the community itself. And the whole point is that then as a Office 365 or SharePoint adding model community, we are in a much stronger place where we know the learnings, we're able to have that open communications in Yammer. We can share our learnings, what works and what doesn't work together. And that's highly beneficial, obviously, for Microsoft. And that's no doubt, just being fully honest and transparent, but that's absolutely highly beneficial for the community as well. This is not about Microsoft telling how to do stuff. This is working together with you guys who are making this program much, much, much better than it would be without of you. So thank you, everybody, for absolutely super, super valuable contributions around the guidance. Good. Moving on things, I do have a 1 minute. It always happens. I'm running out of time, even though there's 30 minutes for me. This is the September release plan. Some of this stuff has been hanging there for quite a long time. The provisioning engine, we keep on evolving that. Additional new capabilities are coming in. We have already published the new schema, the provisioning schema, which we used for serialization of these objects. And the next stage is then to actually implement that support in the provisioning engine. And that includes like managing language settings, regional settings, auditing settings in the engine itself. So you're able to provision sites and control those just using code, which is one of the confusions around the fact that we do have that schema discussion as well. The engine itself doesn't need, you don't have to serialize, you don't need to have any XMLs, but this, we use the schema to drive the engine implementation, which is then driving driving the thinking, how do we spend our time and where do we actually spend the development efforts. Documentation is absolutely crucial. This is one area where we will spend time on the upcoming months on the provisioning engine. We will have a technical writers from Microsoft helping with us on that one. Core components will be evolving, absolutely. There will be additional samples. We have been working with Microsoft IT, MSIT, to include some governance applications or add-ins, and they will be introduced in the September release. We're working with Frank and Brian to get those included in the upcoming weeks. PMP Partner Pack will start, and then the articles and guidance. We will really, really, really try to get those things moving as well within the next month. And then finally, oh, 1 minute too late, not too bad. So it's time for Irvin and Luis. Let's see if Luis has a network issues resolved. But let's first give the stage for Irvin.
Yep.
So the provisioning engine Delta support, and you can talk about the engine and well, I know that Irving is talking about in general the usage. And after that, Louis is going to take over on that one.
Right. I just see that Louis has a different is using a different account right now. If you
okay.
Check the chat.
So we need to just promote him. Quick comment from my side: I need to drop from the call at some point. So, but I know that Frank and Irving and guys will be hosting the call until the end. So, Irvin, take away, have fun, and we'll talk later.
Sure. Right, so I don't have any slides. I'm just going to present my desktop, and that also means that I won't be able to see the chat. So if you have any questions, I won't be able to see it. You can write them in the chat, and maybe Frank or someone else can unmute and maybe read out a question to me if it's one. Or... Right. What I want to show you is the Delta handling. So in the early releases of the provisioning engine, it was a pretty dumb engine. So it connected to the site, retrieved the artifacts, and dumped it out to an XML file if that was your serialization format. What in the latest release we implemented is something called Delta handling. And basically what it means is that we check for your site and we check if there's any changes compared to an out-of-the-box site. And if we will only include those changes in the template. And that works both ways. So by extracting, we only extract those changes. And by applying, we only apply those changes. and it gives kind of an interesting scenario. Now, what I'm going to demo today is unfortunately not working in your environment if you downloaded the master package, the master release. We found an issue. We got some reports from people that state that the templates contained much more information than they expected it to be. And we found the issue today. And I'll explain a bit where that issue came from. And it also explains how we do the actual Delta handling. And that helps you maybe in, because it's not complete yet. The Delta handling is there, but we're by far not fully there. And it might help you in debugging issues with it. So the idea is that, and I'm using obviously the PowerShell commands because, as Vesta said, those are my little baby. So I'm going to connect to my site. Hopefully, that will work. If it fails, I'll blame Windows 10. There we go. So the fact that I have a site allows me to retrieve all the lists, so I have a valid connection. So I'm going to extract the template. I'm just pressing enter, not exporting it to a file, because it will be a very lightweight template in this case, and it actually fits on the screen. It connects to the site, retrieves all the artifacts, and it checks what is different from the out-of-the-box site. And there we go. This is the whole template. So the only thing in there right now is the additional administrator, which is me. So there are no lists, no features, no custom actions, nothing in there. Just basically a blank template. Now, how does this work? What we do in the code, we have something called a base template. So if I navigate there, see two folders here, V15 and V16. These are the templates that we generated from the sites, from the out-of-the-box site collection. So for instance, for a team site, STS0, we generated a full template. And here we didn't run the delta handling. So we say, give us everything there is in this site. And we dump that in an XML. And that one is in the code. So this is part of the core engine. That is part of the DLL that you download if you get the NuGet packets. Now, when we generate the template, we basically...
We're not seeing anything, I don't think.
You don't? Okay, I'm sharing full screen.
I can actually see.
I can see too.
Is everyone with me then? Sorry, I'll mute again.
No worries, my friend.
Could the hair shape on Doctor's voice though on the line?
It was actually, hi Bill.
Hi Aaron.
Right, so this is the base template. And this base template, we compare against the template that we generate from your site. So we first create the full template. And then that full template is being compared against this template. We take away some elements from the XML that are not relevant, like, for instance, GUIDs. GUIDs are always different, so we're not comparing GUIDs. We're not comparing URLs, because the base template URL is obviously different from your site collection URL. So those elements we take away, and then we compare list by list, view by view, field by field. So what you will notice is if you use the new engine, it will actually takes a tiny bit longer to generate a template. Because we do this comparison. Well, from our feeling, generating a template is not really business critical when it comes to timing, how long it takes to generate a template. So I think it shouldn't be a problem that it takes a tiny bit longer to generate a template. So this is the base empty blank template. So I'm going to the site now, and I'm going to do something that you couldn't do in the previous version of the engine, but you can do right now. And I'm going to the document library. The built-in document library is shared documents. And I'm create a column. Say test. And click OK. Go back to the document library. There is my test column, which is part of the default view. If I extract the template again, and this time I'm going to put it in a file. And open the template. And something didn't work out here. Was I in the correct site? No. Ha. Huh. I was in the wrong site here. I was in Ignite 2. So let's clean up this site, otherwise I break my complete demo. Take away this column. This site is out of the box again. Go to the library. I'm in site 1 right now. So Ignite 1 there, creating a column. Document library, there's my test column. Generate a template again, asks me if I want to override it. Works its way through all the artifacts. You see, it takes a bit longer now for the list instances because they're pretty complex. There are like fields, field references, views in there. So it will take a bit longer for the list instance to generate. And I'm going to check out the template. And now you will see that in the template, I have my document library, because that one differs from the out-of-the-box one. And you see that in there is my test field. And the rest is still empty. So there's just one additional list instance. Would I have added another list to the site? That list will obviously pop up too. So If I connect to my other site, and just to confirm, if I go back to, this is Ignite 2, load, reload that site, the document library, there's no test column here, and apply the template. One change we made, I think two releases ago, is also that we now only apply, you will see in the progress bar, only those things that are actually changed. So it feels a bit faster. It actually is not faster, but there's less progress steps to go through. Reload. And there's my test call. So I modified now an out-of-the-box document library. In the older version of the engine, we would just skip a list. If a list was already there with the same URL and name, we would just skip that list and not apply the changes to it. So now we effectively look at the list. Is there a test column? No, add the test column. Is there a test column but has a different properties? Apply those different properties. So that is basically in a nutshell how we do delta handling. It applies to list instances, views, fields, and that's basically it for now. So a common question that I see online is, do we handle pages? No. And pages, if you think about it, pages are complex, regardless of what is in the page, but figuring out if a page is content or functionality or not, and did it change, and how do we handle the change? Do we override it or not? Those kind of questions. That makes it very complex when it comes to delta handling. So do we extract those pages? Do we have, it's a difficult thing to handle. So for now, we don't do pages. The standard answer from my side is that we say we can apply pages. So you can modify the XML yourself, add a page to it and apply and override an existing page, but we will for now not extract pages. So if you have an issue with delta handling, if you think that the template generated or the engine generated a template that contains something that is that should be there because you think it's out of the box, find the corresponding templates here. Find, like, because we figure out at runtime when we connect to the site what is the template used, the site definition used to create that site. So if it's a theme site, we figure out this STS0 and we open this template and work our way through it. So find that element in here that you find in your own template and compare it. It might be that we missed something. It could be that something was changed in the actual site definition. And when it comes to that, that is actually the bug that we found. We released the master release. The XML that it generated when extracting a template contained a tiny bit more than the XML we generated when we created these delta or base templates. So when we compare the list from the base template with the one that was generated by the engine, they were a tiny bit different. There were actually two XML elements extra in the base template that were not there in the generated template from the engine. And the engine, as a result, thought that the list was different and it would include it in the template. It doesn't affect applying the template to the site. It shouldn't matter at all, but it just gives you a lot more data. And it's just, it's more difficult to see what's happening in your template. That was so what we will do is we will update, or actually in the dev branch, we already updated the version 16 template. We regenerated these, and we will also regenerate the version 15 for SharePoint on-premise templates. And then we will release a updated NuGet package. We do another master merge in the coming days, and we will release a new NuGet package for you to download. And if you have set up Visual Studio to automatically retrieve your NuGet package, it will just go automatically the moment you open up your solution. So that is delta handling in a nutshell. Are we there yet? No, not fully. We're there quite far, but we're not fully there yet. So for instance, term sets, that would be nice to have. Content types, by the way, we do. with content types, we do handle. That was the last, the one I forgot to mention, actually. Content types, we do handle. One thing to remember is that we will never, ever delete something. So if something is missing in your template, and that is present in your site, we will not delete the artifacts. We're behaving similar to the old solution files, the solution packages in SharePoint on-prem worked. They also never deleted something. And it's the same with us. We will never, ever, ever delete something because that can break so many things. So we will never do that in the Delta handling. Right. So I'm going to stop presenting. That was my presentation. And see if there's any questions.
Hi, Lewis. Are you able to share, my friend?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I'm starting to present. Let me know when you guys can see my screen, please. Can you see it now?
It is.
It's still loading here.
It's still loading. Here we go. I can see your desktop now.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, my scenario about using Azure Redis Cache is because we are creating a software as a service application that will be hosted in Windows Azure. And for that application, we bought a template. And in that template, as you can see on the left side, you can see the first name, the last name, and the job title of the current user. So we are using Azure AD authentication. But because this is not an Angular JS app, so every time you click on a new menu option, the entire page will be refreshed. And getting those details from Azure Active Directory, it's a heavy operation. It can take between 2 or 3 seconds to load every time the first name, the last name, and the job title.
Hey, Lewis, sorry to interrupt, my friend. Yep. We're only seeing your Skype window now. Oh, now we see IE. Okay, we're good.
Okay.
Yep, sorry to interrupt, my friend.
Okay. So basically, what I did, the demo is very simple. I will show some configuration on the code later. So basically, what I want is to get information from Active Directory for the one specific user. And show it on a screen. So the first time the page load for this demo, it took almost 5 seconds, but the average is between 2 and 3 seconds. And when you are using Azure Redis Cache, it's a lot better. So I'm gonna try refreshing my page here. So I have an expiration of 1 minute for this demo, so it took 2 seconds. But the second time, it only took 87 milliseconds. That's using Azure Redis Cache. So the first thing you guys need to know is, are you guys seeing
we Azure lost your. Yeah, I think we're seeing something else. Can you reshare again, please?
Yeah. Okay. Present. It says it's loading. You should see my Skype screen now.
Yeah, it's coming, it's coming. We see your Skype window now.
Okay. And you see now a page get properties for user?
I do not, but that could be just me. Is anyone else seeing
No, I see Skype window.
Yep, I see Skype.
No,
now we're good.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if you guys saw it on the last few minutes, but the demo is just about getting information from Azure Active Directory. The first time this page loads, it goes to Azure Active Directory to get the user profile information, like the first name, the last name, and the job title, for example. So the first time it takes about 2 seconds, and the second time it takes only 90 milliseconds, which is 20 times faster. So now I'm going to switch to the Azure portal. Basically, you need to create an Azure Redis cache service. It's just clicking on the plus and finding the Azure Redis. I'm not going to do that because that takes about 10 or 15 minutes to provision. So I'm just going to go to Azure Redis cache. Then here you have the connection string and the access keys. And the access keys is what you need to use in your web.config. I'm going to switch to Visual Studio. Can you guys see Visual Studio?
I still see your browser.
It's just your browser window.
Thanks. It's my connection is slow, I guess.
We see the Azure portal now.
I am on Visual Studio now.
Okay, yep.
Okay, so what do you need for this demo? First, you need to install a NuGet package called stackexchange.redis. Second, in the web.config, you need to have your client ID, password, tenant, and the Azure Redis cache with the connection string, and the password is the key I just showed on the portal. And then the code for this. So I use a stopwatch class to measure the time between both requests. And you see in the class user profile controller now?
No, we're still on your browser.
Well, so let me know.
Now we see Visual Studio and we're at your get user profile number.
Okay. So basically, you should be seeing the user profile controller where I have a method to use the Azure Redis cache. I'm gonna stay on this screen so you have time to load the screen. I guess my upload is connected is slow. Can you confirm if you can see the get user profile method now?
I see that.
Okay. So basically, I use a connection. This comes from the Stack Exchange Redis NuGet package. This allows me to open only one connection, because if you are using Redis cache in your entire application, there is a limit of 10,000 connections, and if you have too many users, you will get to the limit, and then you will get exceptions. Then I get from cache a user profile. This is also coming from the Stack Exchange Redis cache NuGet package. If the user profile is null, then I need to get it from Azure Active Directory. So all this code you see here, I'm not going to explain it line by line. What I'm doing is building a URL for the REST API to get the user profile information, the current user profile information. Once I have it, I set it on cache. The key of the cache is the email. The second parameter is the actual object with the information I need, and the third parameter is a time span for expiration. then I return it that object, and if the object wasn't null, that means the object was already on cache, and then you don't need to make a call to Azure AD. So when you see in the demo that it takes like 80 or 90 milliseconds, is because it went through the else statement. I think that's all. I don't know if you have any questions. You can put any kind of object here, as long as it has the attribute serializable, then you can put any object on Azure Redis cache.
Okay, thank you very much, Louis. I really appreciate it. We all appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we have a few minutes left. Is there any other questions that the community has? And feel free to come off mute. We have a question: is what is the current status on PMP support for VS 2015 and MVC 6 and its project structure makeover? We are testing with the PMP core with VS 2015. We have not seen any issues as of yet. We do have some samples that rely on previous versions of MVC, so we will be working on upgrading those to MVC 6, and we'll provide that feedback. Martin, I would love to see that. If you can post that out into the Yammer group so that we can look into it. To be honest, I have not tested with MVC 6 as of yet. I had that on my to-do list for this week. Thanks, Martin.
When it comes to Visual Studio 2015, the whole core team uses 2015 already, so that's not a problem at all. But yeah, I've seen Martin demo this issue too.
Oh, you've seen it, Erwin?
I've seen it happen.
Yeah. Ah, okay. So we'll follow up with Erwin on there, and we'll see what we can do for you, Martin. With the code base, so are you, Hyerik, are you interested? The question is around where's a good place to start. Are you looking to jumpstart how PMP core works or just development in general? So right now we are working on better guidance. The first thing that I would do is, look at the core component, look at the unit tests. The unit tests show a great way of how the code base works. That would be my first step. The other thing too, right, is if we know we have opportunities with our guidance, so we will definitely be enhancing our guidance and our documentation related to the core component, because we have the provisioning framework in there and we have a lot of extensions to help you out. But I would also look at the Channel 9 videos that Vesa has shared earlier in the session, and so that you could watch the videos and how we leverage the PMP core component through all of our demos. Erwin, did you want to add something?
Yeah, if you want to start using the core component in your own project, there's basically one way of doing it, and that is adding the NuGet package, and then it's effectively a set and forget. As long as you have a using Microsoft SharePoint.client namespace, if you use that namespace in your code, you're set. You will automatically get all the core component extension methods there. So you just enter web dot and you will see tons of additional methods there that will help you to do things. So just a matter of getting the NuGet packets in and you're set.
You're welcome. One last question. Do we have anything else? Give it a little moment. Sounds like not. On behalf of the Patterns and Practices team, thank you very much for listening to today's session. Erwin, any final words from you?
No, thank you. Thank you for joining.
And we'll get this posted out up on Channel 9 as quickly as possible. Have a good day. Have a good evening, everyone. Sharing's caring.
Thank you. Bye.